and welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai, and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Sean Kay. On today's show, we chat a World Cup Finals recap, the epic between Messi and Mbappe. What a match. We dive into all of that and plenty other World Cup stuff, plus some MLS news, TFC making a big signing. We look ahead a bit to that upcoming season. Plus, as always, it's the mailbag, Ask AFP. Folks, how are we doing? I feel like the whole world took in that game on Sunday. I think the viewership number was something like 2.5 billion people watched. They got a good show. They got a really good show. Holy cow.
Where do they get a number like that?
You know how they make up those streaming numbers, right? They're all just picked out of a hat. It's like, yeah, 2.5 billion.
That it was actually 3 billion Facebook views. Yeah,
the completion time was like 20 seconds, not the full match. But yeah, that's how you fudge the metrics. But it did feel like everyone was watching, and rightfully so. What a spectacle. I know this tournament, a lot of it didn't feel great. And we've talked about all of the issues that have gone into Qatar hosting this tournament. But on Sunday, I think the final that we wanted to see, we got. And we got a really good game between two historic footballing nations and two superstars who played like superstars. I mean, what else can you say? It was just, it's pretty special. And all that to say as well, we were 10 minutes from not seeing any of that because it looked like Argentina was going to coast to a 2-0 win.
Yeah, it was a bizarre one, but it was, you know, I think as you said, as dramatic as a game as we've ever seen. And, you know, the tough part with this World Cup is enjoying the gameplay and whatever doesn't excuse the other parts of what happened or apologize for them in any way. But, you know, there's a reason we love the World Cup and there's a reason that it's special is because it, one, combines everyone, and two, with one game and one moment, like everything matters. And I think we saw that over the course of the month, and it was really special and it was a lot of fun, and it's definitely the best sporting event in the world. And normally it's like despite the final, and now yeah. This one has that part of it in it. And so it's like, oh wow, holy crap.
Yeah, it was. And I'm still living in the moment, so it's tough to sort of look back and react to not anything that you're just feeling. But yeah, it definitely felt like you're watching something that you're going to remember for the rest of your life, whether you were 10, 40, 80. It's one of those moments that you're just going to always remember, that when the two biggest players in the world right now just put on their working boots and just provided the world everything that they wanted. It was incredible. And I think, I don't know, maybe I've been a little hard on Kylian Mbappe over the little, like, through his career, and he's won so much, but I just wasn't sure if he was going to be the next 1A, and 100%, there's no question about it. He is a phenomenal talent, and I'm excited to see when he hits his peak, what he can do.
It's one of those things where I heard this argument. It's like, well, people remember what Mbappe did in this game, and will it be just another footnote in World Cup finals? But no, I think it'll stand out on its own, and it'll be one of those performances that it gets its due, even though France is on the losing end of it. I mean, what, just an insane series of events from the 80th minute onward, and that included Messi scoring an extra time. Like I said, I think we're going to cover all of this, but I did think the post-game stuff was strange in many ways. This trophy celebration took forever to start, and I wasn't sure why. I just had an ominous feeling, I guess, and maybe it was because they were preparing all the trophy stuff and the stages and whatever, but it just felt like a very, very drawn-out, long process, and maybe it was because all of the stars of the game were being featured once again, and they deserved that kind of theatrical wait, but I thought the game was amazing. The end of it, it all felt a bit surreal, I think. And then obviously the scenes and from Argentina and Argentina fans around the world. Holy hell, what a party that must be.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but, you know, it's one of those. I've been to one Argentine World Cup game. It was a group stage game. Like, I can't even imagine how that elevates. So to now have it be the final and for Messi to have won it. And yeah, what you see from inside of Argentina and then from around the world. I think those are two things that are both cool and different. I think one is a beautiful soccer culture in Argentina and like everyone coming together to be able to express that in this way, right? That's what we're seeing in those crowds that we see from Buenos Aires. And then the other is I just think at this point in the way it went, so many people were rooting for Messi that it was almost like the world was all cheering for him and cheering for Argentina. And that's unique because as much as there are global stars and Brazil's probably the one where maybe it also happens because what they mean to the game and to so many people when they play as a national team. But like, I don't think any of the finals that we've seen, at least in my lifetime, has had so many people feel the same way and cheer the same way.
Yeah, I think even though you could be a Mbappe supporter, and I think I found myself pulling for France as well to make it a game because it looked for a while like it was simply the Angel Di Maria show and that was going to be the main story. But I was excited to see France get back into the match. And yet I also was wondering about Messi and thinking about what it would mean if they maybe blew that game and they lose it in heartbreaking fashion. And it's just another heartbreaking moment for him at this tournament. But it wasn't, because sports and Emi Martinez is probably the best keeper in the world, or maybe the best shithouser that we've ever seen, or at least in a long time. But like I said, that trophy celebration was long and strange, but him doing that gesture with his Golden Glove award will last in my mind for some time. I will say before we move on and talk about the game more, it's interesting people how they look at this Argentina team, like the Messi stuff aside, quite a few people remarked to me that they weren't the most likable side. And I think I took it the other way where I respected the gamesmanship. And I think the Holland penalty shootout, there was a lot of other stuff going on there as well. But they did take on this mantle of being the bad boys led by a babyface. Like, everyone loved Messi, but everything else about them, you could argue, wasn't that great to cheer for. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
I enjoyed the way that they played. They had an edge to them. And yeah, there's a few players that aren't really lovable. Romero being one of them. Like Cristiano Romero, like 5 minutes into the World Cup, goes out to concuss his club goalkeeper. So there are some real assholes on the club.
Man, who let the Tottenham fan in?
But overall, I loved the way that midfield worked all tournament long. I think one of the guys who's going to elevate himself to level upon level upon level, Alexis McAllister, sort of embodied the team in itself. Somebody that worked his butt off, won challenges, started plays, was so good in that 1-2 role. Yeah, I loved this team. I thought they were really fun and they had an edge to them because you need that to win big tournaments. You have that chip on your shoulder that won them the Copa America. So I don't know. Once again, I can understand why people would hate them, but I also think that there's a little bit of, that makes you like them a little bit more.
Yeah, I've been on the same side as you, Devang. I didn't think they were dirty at all, except in that Netherlands game. And I actually am really endeared that it mattered to them the way it does. And Bobby has said this to me a couple of times with Lewandowski scoring his goal of that guy, he does everything all the time. And then he scored in the World Cup and you just saw how much it meant to him. It reminds you, it's cool to see that it matters to these other people. Like it matters to us, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I'm being a nerd about specific parts of it, but Messi was mad at Van Gaal for ruining Raquel May's career. That's awesome. That's Messi being a fan like us. That's me being I don't know, dunking on the Miami Heat because Alonzo Mourning tried to foul Marcus Camby 20 years ago. What more could you possibly want from your star players than for one, that to still be in their mind in this moment? To do Raquel May's celebration in Von Hall's face when you're trying to win your first World Cup, that's showing that how much they care about the sport and the team and the history, which is everything you want. And outside of that, I didn't think this was a dirty Argentina team. There's, moments where there's been fighting and a little diving and all that type of stuff, but nothing outside the norm. And I think that that's a weird narrative. I do think there's an element of, I don't know, regionalism or whatever you want to call it, right? If Portugal was doing the same thing, if Germany was doing the same thing, I doubt people are talking about it in the same way. Not saying the Argentines are exactly like the little scrappy underdog minority group, but they are more so even than a lot of the teams we see, you know, at World Cup finals and World Cup semifinals. But I've heard the same discourse. I think it's weird. I think it's kind of come out of nowhere. But I don't agree with it at all. I really enjoyed this team. And one of the things that's been surprising to me, and actually I didn't realize it until like an hour before the World Cup final, is I didn't realize people thought France was favorites. Like, it was a no-brainer to me that Argentina has been the best side at this tournament outside of the Saudi Arabia game. It was clear to me they were favorites, unless Mbappe created a bunch of moments, which he did. And still, outside of the 3 minutes to close the game when no one wanted to tackle Mbappe because everyone was too scared, it never felt to me like Argentina was going to lose unless it was in penalties.
No, that's true. And we watched Teo Hernandez get cooked just repeatedly for a shocking amount of time. That will last in my brain as well. No, these are good answers you guys give. And I think I was letting the discourse sway me a bit. I saw there was some poking fun at Mbappe in the locker room as well after the game. But it's a huge moment. And I'm going to choose to look at this as just celebration and joy and a good moment for the game. When we come back after the break, obviously, we get into everything else World Cup related, including a deeper dive on this final and some closing thoughts coming up next. Welcome back to a football podcast. Well, if this is it for your Lionel Messi at the international stage, what a moment. What a spectacle. That you had the perfect guy on the mic as well to honor this significant result on Sunday.
Didn't start the game. He can finish it. Montiel. Argentina, champions of the world. And a nation will tango all night long. 36 years since Maradona and Mexico. New throng of immortals. Messi will be sainted. France this time denied, defied.
It's Peter Drury, of course. I didn't hear that live call at the end because I had now shifted to some instant reaction. The tango line's pretty cheese. Like, I know people love Peter Drury and he's great, but that line was a bit much for me. But yeah,
that is the most British thing ever. To be like, I know one thing about this place, so I'll say the one thing. I hate that you just played that for us, Devang, and I hate that you complimented it. I hate you so much right now.
David Goss, are you not a Peter Drury fan?
I don't really care. I think at this point, I don't like anyone, but yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of Brits that I'm going to be like,
I can respect that.
Yeah. Sorry, you guys are getting me at the end of a long month. I apologize.
Okay. I respect it. No, I respect it, sir. So we talked about a bunch about this game. Maybe we open this up in a group discussion. Some of the bigger things that happened, fellas. Angel Di Maria, the quote-unquote big game player. There was a big call by the coaching staff to insert him in the starting lineup, and that seemed to be one of the master strokes of the match. You also had Didier Deschamps, I would say, doing some unorthodox things in an attempt to get this game going correctly for France, including some pretty shocking substitutions just before halftime. But I think the Di Maria story will be one I remember as well, of course, outside of Messi and Mbappe, and someone who, like, if you've been prem-pilled and you only watch the Premier League and maybe you're a Manchester United fan, maybe you only have not terribly great memories of him, but consistently a very, very excellent player that does have a tendency to show out when he needs to, really, because that was just incredible.
I compared him to Garincha, I think, at the beginning of the World Cup, of like, he's been second fiddle for a guy who is world class. And I think there's good and bad in there. Like, he's won so many trophies because he's played with some of the greatest players of all time, but I don't know that he's gotten the credit. I mean, he never did for Real Madrid, right? Like, he started every final.
No.
But people talk about Ronaldo and they talk about other pieces. He's done it for PSG. He did it for Manchester United as well. Like, he has done it on the biggest stages for the biggest teams. He's played well in those big games, as you mentioned. And I'm pretty sure he cried after his goal, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. on the field. I don't know that I've ever seen that, especially in the first half of a game. And it's just, I think it goes back to the injury in 14, the opportunities that have been missed for him, less so in terms of performance and more so because of just not being available for those big games. And I think, like, the emotion and the buildup, it was perfect. Like, at all the Messi discourse is great, but he deserves everything he's getting. And I think it's really special that it ended that way for him, that he got to sort of play that part. And, you know, he'll be in the history books. He's outside of Messi and Mbappe, he's the other guy that scored, you know, in the World Cup final.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you sort of, I don't know if you knew it was going to happen, but you knew that France was going to clog up the center of the park, because that's where Messi seemed to operate in this match. And so that left the one side completely open. And I think tactically Argentina knew that and knew that they were going to hammer that side. And then to hit on Di Maria having such a strong game and having that opportunity to continually attack and attack and attack, it was almost like that perfect relationship of tactics and an elite player rising into the moment. Because even like the substitution, well, might have been the right move at the time to get Di Maria, who might have not had the legs to do it, you could see the second that he got off the field that sort of area was lost again, and France sort of gained a little bit more possession in that moment. But it was a hell of a game by him, and it was an incredible 45 minutes by Argentina. It was a one-sided affair. It was, I was sat there at halftime being like, I don't think I've seen such a dominant performance from a team in a long time. And it was just so, so nice to see.
I don't think I've seen, this is what I said, right? Now we're all hanging out together, rewatching the game. I don't think I've ever seen that dominant a half in a World Cup final.
No.
There's been good stretches, and Spain played a certain way and that Dutch team played a certain way. So the game, you know, played out like obviously a lot of Spanish possession, but we've never really seen a goal difference in a World Cup final. So it's, you know, outside of France, Croatia, which I think was a little bit different because it was, I think those two teams were at different levels. Like, that was new. And so, as you said, like, the dominance that Di Maria brought them, the way they played, honestly, that's where I think there's a lot of places where Scaloni deserves credit, but no more so than, I spent an hour going into the game being like, Di Maria's starting, so he's on the right side. Turn Teo Hernandez into a defender. Try and pin Mbappe if you can. If not, take advantage of the space he leaves. And so to start Di Maria, but to put him on the left and force Dembele to be a defender and then take advantage of that and sort of allow Messi that natural body shape to open up and keep switching the ball to Di Maria when he comes in on his left, like, it was, it worked to perfection. And the only mistake they made, which is a mistake every team has made at the World Cups, so you can't really blame them, is they had to go up three. They needed the third goal to kill it. And it's a World Cup final. France is there as well. So it just didn't happen.
It's the most dangerous lead in sports. We all know 2-0. I consider myself a soccer fan and someone who watches quite a bit of it throughout the week, quite a lot of it probably. To be honest, I had not heard of Randall Colomwani before this tournament. I'll put my hand up and say I did not. And that substitution that Deschamps made, which was the double change, Giroud off, Dembele off. Giroud, it seemed like there could have been an injury issue there as well, but it was rather bold to me, shocking even. And I thought Mwani was really good actually in this game when he got settled in. But I feel like in a losing effort as well, it's rare I find myself admiring the coach so much, but I do really feel like they dealt with a lot of weird stuff. There's a virus in the camp. A lot of key players already injured who weren't there that were going to be starters. Your Pogbas, your Contes, your Benzemas. They found a way. And I mentioned I hadn't really known a lot about Randall Colomwani before this tournament, but now I know a lot about him.
Yeah, Devang, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. And I guess what's mind-blowing, but puts into context of why France could go to back-to-back World Cup finals, try and be the first team since Brazil 1958 to win back-to-back World Cups, is because of the player pool. And so you talk about in that situation, he was a fill-in a day before the opening game of the World Cup for Nkunku, who is the star player of a Champions League team. You know, you're missing in this team Kimpembe, you're missing Pogba, you're missing Kante. Like, not only are you missing guys who won the 2018 yeah. World Cup, you're also missing guys who have already replaced those guys. Like, some of these pieces were second and third string, including Teo Hernandez starting for his brother Lucas after he tore his ACL in the opening game. Like, it's just an example of how deep the pool is for France. And it is like one of the more incredible things in the world of soccer that this country has built, this system that just produces players at such a high level.
Yeah, and I think the manager discourse, I think, is always one prime for stupidity. And I blame myself for that as well. I think I've dabbled in it. And just some of the things that I think maybe I was thinking going into this tournament about, like Gareth Southgate, and does he know what he's doing? And is he really up to this job? And I think my answer was yes. And I think for Deschamps, I wonder if he gets enough due for what he's done. And I mean, he did win a World Cup in 2018 and they came second this time. Just to note, Karim Benzema announced he's retiring from international play the day after this World Cup final. So France will be fine. Don't cry for them. I think they'll be back with quite a few megastars, including Mbappe. Mbappe winning the Golden Boot, outside of him winning this whole thing, I felt like it was justice for how special he was, and bears repeating how young he is and whether or not he is on that track to maybe being in the same conversation as them. But I think he is, in the sense that I think Messi and Ronaldo are probably the vanguards of this era. But now you can say Mbappe is going to be one of those players as well.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think the one thing that like holds me back a little bit is just how ridiculous Messi and Ronaldo have been for such a long period of time. And while I assume that Mbappe is going to continue to do great things and keep going, like he's averaging almost a goal a game for PSG and every other game for France. So like, I don't expect him to slow down, but like Messi was scoring at a clip of like 40, 50, 60 goals a calendar year. And you're just like, how can people continue to do this? And then also looming in transition periods. If Mbappe moves from PSG to Madrid or to Man City or wherever he's linking to go next, is that going to go as seamless? Or does he stay in PSG and then always have that tag of and I mean this with like sheer jest, but like in a farmer's league, and always have that on him. Like it's, I would just say that while I agree that Mbappe is going to be the elite guy, it's really tough to measure him up to these two elite athletes that have done the unthinkable before they entered into the scene 15 years ago. So yes, he is, but I would say just like we're measuring him against, in my mind, the two of the top five greatest soccer players of all time. So remember that.
So I actually think, and I've talked about this a bit, I actually think he'll end up being elevated.
Okay.
Because of that, and I say this pretty much, the comparison I make all the time is Kobe. There's just not a planet that Kobe's on any level playing field with MJ or LeBron. But he was the next guy after MJ, right? And you're always looking for the next guy.
Yeah.
And everyone elevated the perception of Kobe over what he was actually capable of, take away the off-field stuff, which brings it back around to Ronaldo, but fine, because he was the next guy. I think that will happen to Mbappe for good and bad, right? It elevates him. It also, as you said, puts him up against a really tough comparison. Like Messi's goals and assists per game will probably blow away whatever Mbappe does. I also think, and this is one of the things I come around to watching this World Cup, and maybe it's unfair because Messi's younger than Ronaldo and has seemed to age a bit better. Ronaldo was a weapon and Messi's more of a game dominator. Mm-hmm. And Mbappe is more of the Ronaldo mold.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the mistakes we've made the entire time with the discourse in comparing the two of them, was also acting like they were the same player. Now, Messi's, I think that became the whole like, well, he's a Barca system guy, right? That's where I think a lot of people ended up taking that argument. But like, he didn't play through Ronaldo. He didn't set the tempo. He didn't control the flow of the game. He popped up and scored in the biggest moments that meant his team won. Based off this World Cup, that feels like Mbappe. Like Mbappe wasn't really on the field yesterday until the 70th minute. But then every time he touched the ball, five Argentine players were sliding around like they'd never played before. So like, I think that's probably what Mbappe's role will be. And he will do it as well as any person in the history of the game and any person on the planet. But it is a slightly different role than what we see from a Messi or what we saw, you know, back in the day from a Zidane or even a Ronaldinho, like at the peaks of their game.
Yeah, I think you guys make very fair arguments, and I think we love to do this, especially in the immediate aftermath, is plot out the next 20 years for these people, which seems a bit ridiculous because, as we know, plenty of things can happen, including transfers to different places like Sean was alluding to. So I think I'm excited is what I'll say. I'm excited to see what he can do next and what heights he can ascend to and where he decides to do it. I saw Emmanuel Macron among the most random luminaries I think I've seen at a World Cup game. It was like him, Elon Musk, Jared Kushner, Macron, just a who's who of like, what? Okay.
Welcome to Doha, baby.
Jesus, seriously. But Mbappe and Mbappe kind of being like, hey, man, give me some space here. And then Messi spiting Salt Bae and being like, get away from me, was probably the highlight of the post-match ceremony, because Salt Bae is cooked. Get this man off my television. Why is he still doing, like, why is he an influencer, I guess? Is this where we're at as a society?
I think so, because I think other Argentine players were like stoked to take pictures with Salt Bae.
Yeah, he was like grabbing Messi, like Bush physically trying to get him for a photo. This guy put some salt on some meat and now he's doing that. Like, I don't know. Not to get too sidetracked by that, but I think it's a good spot to maybe give our final World Cup thoughts as we wrap up this tournament. It was, like I said, not a normal World Cup by any means, including when it fell in the calendar. Some amazing stories, including Morocco and them making history, by becoming the first African team to make the semifinals. That was an incredible run. We had Canada, of course, in this tournament. We had Croatia. We had Alphonso Davies scoring the maiden goal for the Canadian men. We had an inspired U.S. run. A lot happened in this last month, but I'm wondering if you guys have a final parting shot for this tournament.
Yeah, it's such a weird decision. Like I think after the game was done, I had chatted with a couple friends and I'm like, of all the World Cups I was cheering against to be a dud, this came up and was potentially the best ever. It had it all, and I will remember it with mixed emotions, but from the Canadian side, it's a moment of pride. It's a moment of 36 years of dreaming and then realizing, and hopefully the next step is progression. And I think that's all you can sort of look at from a Canadian side. They showed up, they threw a couple punches, they took a couple punches, and they showed everyone that we're more than just a hockey country. And so I'm just glad. And we need to make that next step, because as crazy as it sounds, we're hosting the World Cup in 4 years, so three and a half years. So get ready, because I think there's no longer the dreamer mentality, but the expectation. And so bring on 2026, bring on BMO Field, bring on the world.
David, I think that was a wonderful sentiment, John. And yes, I'm looking forward to 2026, even though we don't know how this tournament will be formatted or what they're going to do with the groups. A lot of questions remaining, but same question to you.
I like the BMO Field thing. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm sitting as well. Yeah, as like, yeah. Make all of these people walk under the tunnel to get to BMO Field and do the whole thing. it's really, we'll have to figure out what poutine places are advising for everyone when they get in 3.5 years. But I think I agree with Sean. You know, I think the off the field stuff being so many different things, it's like hard to quantify it in one term. I think that stuff's going to amplify as time goes along, because I think we're going to learn a lot more coming out of the World Cup, right? About the human rights abuses, about what we're hearing is the environmental impact of this World Cup. So I think the story's still to be told on a lot of things. But in saying that, on the field, I think this will be a World Cup that will be remembered for sure. I think it'll be Morocco. I think it'll be Messi. I think we'll remember sort of what feels like a global equalization where more teams could compete at a World Cup level, while also it being the crowning achievement for Messi and the way the world came together and celebrated him winning. So I think there'll be a lot of big moments that we remember from this World Cup.
Just in time for all those year-end recap shows as well, which I know we all love, but we're going to be seeing a lot of highlights from this final, I'm sure, for many years and from this tournament as well. And yeah, I think you guys did a great job summing it up. I mean, there was a lot of nefarious things that I observed. Like, I didn't need to see Gianni Infantino 80 times per match when he was there. Like, I simply did not need that at all. But there was a lot of things like that, I think, that reminded you of who's in charge and who's calling the shots really for organizations of this scale. But then also a wonderful scene, like seeing the Moroccan players celebrate with their families, with their moms on the pitch. That thing, those images will stick with me, I think, for a very long time. So feels like every international event, basically, that's a Renetto where it's like, yep, this feels bad, but also, God, it's great. And sports and all that. And it's like every Olympics or World Cup, that's basically how we end and how we get ready for the next stop along the way, which for us is MLS land. When we come back after the break, TFC making moves, including Matt Hedges. We talk about it next on AFP. Welcome back to AFP. I mentioned in the tease that Toronto FC, who struggled mightily in 2022 to keep the ball out of their net, is back in the news for some of their recent acquisitions. An old face, Victor Vasquez, signing a deal for this season with an option for 2024. And the big news, I think, in terms of what this could mean for a team that could not defend for their lives last year, Matt Hedges signing a two-year TAM deal. He's 32 years old. This is someone who's quite decorated. I've seen the Drew Moore comp be made by a lot of people, and you can understand why. Matt Hedges has won a lot of individual honors, and he's also helped Dallas accomplish some pretty impressive things as well during his tenure there, including serving as a captain for them. He's a leader. He's someone that you would hope brings some immediate stability to the back line, David. I think overall, all of those things I mentioned, those are the boxes you would want to check if you're TFC looking to rebuild. What was their biggest weakness last year?
Totally agree. This is, you know, this was, I think, the first of everyone's shopping list. There are drawbacks, potentially. So that's where the danger sits, is how much guaranteed years do you give a guy where, you know, Dallas let a lifer walk away, a former defensive, you know, defender of the year in this league. There's a reason why. And so there's risk with it. And there was risk with the Drew Moore move as well. And it worked out. Now, I think Chris Mavinga being brought in, who is next to Matt Hedges? I don't think Shane O'Neill and Lucas McNaughton are at that level yet. as much as Matt Hedges would help them more than what they had in help last year, right, to help elevate their performances, I still think Matt Hedges alone is not enough. It's not Alex Collins or Aaron Long or, you know, in his heyday, Chad Marshall or Hamison Olave, these guys where you could put whatever next to them and they'd still probably be at the center of a great back line. That's not Hedges right now. So it's the right move, and it's definitely a guy who can you can help build the whole thing around because he is, you know, a smart player. He's a leader. He's a veteran. But you still need to add more. Now, the one thing I'll say, and the nice part about free agency is you didn't have to give anything up. You didn't have to trade for him. You didn't have to spend a transfer fee. So for a team like TFC that's used some of those things to get a Mark Anthony K recently and whatnot, it's nice to keep all that powder dry to be able to now continue to add.
Yeah, I think to me, Sean, this is just the first step of many, and it is an excellent start, as David alluded to, but they're going to have to rework this entire thing, and that starts from the goalkeeper position as well. We saw Alex Bono officially moving on. He signed with DC United, so that ends his job. I don't think anyone thought he was going to be coming back, but some finality there. That's where we are probably looking at next, SK. I think we'll talk about Vasquez, but it's not just one center back that they need to add.
No, no. And there's still questions. There's still mystery around Mavinga. I would say from a troll perspective, Chris Mavinga's Twitter account is the 1A or number so one much. Of letting you know. He just tweets something to be like,
it's best 11.
Yeah, he is best 11. Best 11. But yeah, they need to find themselves, I wouldn't say an elite goalie, but they need to find value and they need to bring in somebody that they know is their number one. But having somebody like Hedges right in front of that goalkeeper does give a little bit of protection. But this team is, yeah, still far from done. They need a left back. They need some midfield support, and they need to figure out who's starting striker for this club. There's still conversations about Io Akinola being shopped around. Jesus, probably Jimenez is probably going to be moved out as well if they can. So there's still a lot of spots, but once again, I think with somebody like Hedges, you create a good spine and a good place without spending anything. And once again, you probably could accumulate a little bit of value from an Io Akinola. I'm assuming there's a few teams sniffing around him and the value is probably at a decent level. So if you can reinvest that currently, the TFC are in a good spot. I just would love to know, and I'm jumping into an Ask AFP question, but I want to ask it now. We hinted about it in the middle of last season, but what is the bar for success at TFC right now for next year? Is it, you got to make a semifinal? And like, how can you say that that's the success line when they're missing four or five starters?
I would say that they have to make a deep run. Like the financial outlay here, I don't know, is something that they can guarantee will be there forever. And in this changing landscape, I know that sounds like a buzzy marketing term, but I do feel like there's more competition for dollars in this market and within MLSE as well. And I think, I mean, the spend currently is very impressive, but I mean, you can't have another repeat of last season again, frankly, because everyone will be gone. And I find it interesting that they went from like one of the youngest teams last year to now they're signing a bunch of old guys. And I'm not denigrating old guys, but I look at Vasquez as well and then think, yeah, they could have used someone like him last year at plenty of moments when you were looking at them maybe rolling out a Noble Okello too many times for their comfort, or Bob Bradley not really trusting some of those midfielders and losing Oso and losing Mark Anthony Kay and kind of going through a revolving door. Like, I can see a role for Victor Vasquez on this team, but it does feel like they're loading up this way, David, because that the expectation is very high, and it's because they're spending a boatload of cash on a few players that no one else is frankly spending.
I think if you're going to break records with your signings and sign guys in the primes and ends of their career, that the expectation should be to win, right? Like, these moves were not made to build up over long term. These moves were made to win tomorrow. So that's the expectation the club put on themselves and announced to the world. And I don't know how you can get around sort of stating the same if someone's asking, you know?
Yeah.
is Mavinga coming back? Who knows? Who will be the starting goalkeeper? Who will be the striker, as Sean's mentioned? I think I saw St. Louis as a potential landing spot for Io Akinola, which would be interesting. Expansion team. But a fresh start for him, potentially.
Why are they trading any of those guys?
Why?
I don't know, man. Petrasso? Why do they trade Petrasso?
But I own Jesus Jimenez. Why are they not the two center forwards for next year?
It's a great question. They've obviously over the last
They're not good enough is the answer. They're not good enough to play with those Italians.
I disagree, but I think that over the last 18 months, there has been long runs of moments, like let's call it 4-6 months for each, where they were playing at an elite level in Major League Soccer. Io scored a bucket full of goals. Jesus Jimenez scored a bucket full of goals. So they can do it at this level. And obviously they were doing it at a clip that maybe they couldn't replicate all the way through, etc. But it just seems like it's just not a fit. And that is such a bullshit answer. But that is what it seems like, is that in the current coaching staff, that those two don't seem like a fit in the locker room and on the field. And what that is unknown. Is it that they don't train hard? Is it not they don't track back? Is it because they don't speak Italian? I don't know. But that is the only thing that sort of left us to believe, is that they're just not a fit.
Okay.
Right? Am I wrong? Does anyone else
no,
feel
I,
otherwise?
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think I was being too harsh when I said that you aren't good enough, but I wonder if they have the same, like Jesus, there was moments when you could see him, the football IQ was there, the soccer IQ was there to play with those guys up top. But I think it requires a certain skill set that maybe they don't feel comfortable with AO and him having, right?
Questioning AO, IO, I get. Like he's a young player, right? A lot of the like contracts and stuff with him was built on potential. You can't guarantee that potential, okay, but you gave him the contract because you kind of didn't have other options. But Jimenez scored 9 goals pretty much all before those two guys got there. Like, he looked good without them. I don't understand how he couldn't be good with them.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, because I think the sample size, it wasn't small enough to be like, well, they'll figure it out if they have a full season to work together. I think they had a pretty good runway to check it out and see if he could blend with those guys. And it didn't seem like it. It seemed like he was doing fine with the kids, right? But I feel like the goals would be okay. The goals don't really concern me as much. So as much as I think a new striker up top would be interesting, I do wonder how they're going to fill out all these other spots going forward. And there's some busy times ahead for Bob Bradley and company. Just to close up, some transactions. James Pantemis, we mentioned Montreal declined his option a few weeks ago, which seemed a bit strange, but he is coming back. Finally, a player is staying with Montreal, but this seemed like this would maybe be the outcome initially when we raised our eyebrows, David.
Yeah, it seemed weird from the start. Like, those are affordable players in a salary cap league. It just, yeah, the whole thing seemed bizarre. Clearly, they were just working out the contract. I liked Pantemis last year. I actually liked Brezza too. I don't think either of them are MLS Cup winning goalkeepers, but you need a roster. And I would assume the number that he's coming back on is affordable enough that he's a first or second. I know we kept saying like, oh, that's one of the things that keeps them from being the top team. They just sold Alistair Johnson and Georgi Mihailovic and Ismail Kone. Like, we're not talking about the half percent that's different between them, Philly, and LAFC anymore. So I don't think in terms of the changes that are going to be made that it was necessary to make a change from James Pantemis right now.
You mentioned an MLS Cup winning keeper. I mentioned Alex Bono officially signing with DC United. I'm almost positive that Bones will have a bounce back season and be quite good for DC United. Good might be a relative term, and good is in the eye of the beholder, but one of those situations where you feel like someone needed a new start, and he's shown in this league and play at a high level, but it did seem like this was the best avenue for all parties. And I frankly want to see him do well there. I want to see him kind of refine his love for the game as well, because it was getting a bit painful by the end of the season. I mean, TFC conceded a million times, but their keepers weren't part of the solution, I'd say. But I think it wouldn't be shocking to see him respond well in DC.
And we've seen similar stories, right? We've seen Nick Raimondo sort of grow as his career went along. We saw Zach McMath last year, Tim Melia on a whole different level, Stephen Fry find his feet once he left Toronto and got to Seattle. Like, there's example of this. I don't think Bono will be the starter because Tyler Miller will be out the gates, but we've seen Miller go out with heavy injuries over the last few years, and I think that's where the Bono acquisition made sense for DC, of just doubling down at a style at that position so that they have the options when they need them.
Finally, we didn't get to this in the World Cup section, but a big moment for MLS. Thiago Almada, part of that Argentina squad, obviously lifting the trophy. He was one of 36 MLS players to be in this tournament, but I think this is the first MLS player to win it, David. I don't know how... Like, this is a cool moment, and the fact that there are some other players from outside the Big Five leagues, I think, is important. But the fact that MLS was one of these leagues, if you're trying to sell this game or this league to people who are maybe not wide-eyed, but they're susceptible to flashy numbers and flashy statements, now that we can say a World Cup winner came from this league, we're good, right? This is the easy sale. We put this in a PowerPoint, send it off to print, and we see dollars.
Yeah, if you're trying to convince the executive board of Boston Global, then yeah, Boston Consulting, then yeah, I guess you nailed it. There's no such thing as the quick fix, right? It doesn't exist. It's everything incrementally all at once. But I said this earlier today on something I was working on. When we talk about growing the game in the US and Canada, this month was a good month, right? Not only did the US mm-hmm. perform and Canada perform, but the World Cup was a big deal. There are more soccer fans, more people who know the names of soccer players, more people who have watched soccer games, more people who want to watch more soccer games than ever before, because this World Cup was fantastic on the field. So, yeah, I know you're joking, and it's cool, and it's good that we can check that one off the list of being a league. I thought Bastian Schweinsteiger won it with Chicago, so I wasn't sure if Chicago had won a World Cup or not. But yeah, that's my feeling coming out of it. And also, Thiago Almada played.
Yeah,
exactly.
So suck it.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool that it's MLS and the Portuguese league as the two breakthroughs here. I mean, Sean mentioned the Farmers League, Liga, but they had quite a tournament for their players as well, in terms of, you're like, oh, wait, there's a lot of talent spread out across this world in every pocket. Okay, that is our MLS roundup. The season is just around the corner. I know, shocking, but we'll talk about the news and notes of this league and the, more importantly, the transactions that are to come. Because like we said, TFC has a lot of work to do on that front. When we come back to wrap up this week's show, it's the Mailbag Ask AFP. Welcome back to AFP. Before we close off this week's episode, a reminder that we are on Patreon.com. I think this is our last show of the year, so I want to send a special thank you to all of our patrons, truly, A, for supporting the show, but also B, for being great company throughout the World Cup and throughout the whole season. We had a lot of good times in there, gents, talking about this sport and other sports and other things going on, but it was a great time for our Discord during the World Cup, Sean.
Yeah, it's, once again, we say it every week, but they are the lifeblood of this podcast and the community, and it just sort of keeps us going. Yeah, it's a great place to join, and join us on Patreon, because there's that. You get episodes a day early, ad-free, and you support a show you listen to every week, which might feel good depending on who you are. But yeah, and join us on chat. You can chat with us all the time. I think as things slow down in the World Cup, I'll be on there a lot more and be able to join in on the chat. But no, it's a good place, great place to chat. Join us on Patreon.
So join the Patreon family at patreon.com/footballpodcast. Still rattled by how many times Sean said chat in the last minute. That was an alarming amount. But Boxing Day is coming. The Premier League's back. Plenty of soccer going on. So yeah, the chat will be bumping. I said it now. Oh my God. Chat. Sean, please take this over.
Yeah, now it's time to chat about our favorite segment. It's now time for Ask AFP, where Devang, I, and David will do our best to answer all your questions. Thanks for everyone who dropped into the Patreon Discord chat and is on Twitter. We're going to start with Mel S. on Discord, and she asked, what was your favorite Canadian or American moment this World Cup? And then on top of that, what was your overall favorite World Cup moment?
Okay, my favorite... That's a great question. My favorite Canadian moment was definitely the first half of the Belgium game, even with the goal against and the PK. It was like the theory finally out in the world, right? We had talked like what it would look like, what it would be. And then just for them to play at the level they played at, I just think was one of the more rewarding things I've ever seen. On the U.S. side, probably the goal against Iran and like that build up and that moment and that release for me, that would be my American moment for sure. And overall at the World Cup, God, there was a lot of good ones. All right, I'll say two. One was Japan beating Germany. Like that was at the beginning, even more so probably than Saudi Arabia beating Argentina. And the other was Morocco's goal against Portugal.
Ooh, great picks. So Canada, obviously it's F Croatia, my favorite moment. John Herdman saying the words that we all wanted to hear. I'm joking. No, it's the Fonzie goal for me. It is still weird. And the fact that the game was flipped so quickly after that, I don't think we really had enough time to truly celebrate it. And because it happened like seconds into the game as well, it just felt like so much so soon. But having a chance to now watch it back again and just see everyone's reaction, see like the players individually reacting to the goal, like Jonathan David's expression in one of the photos, I just it makes me smile every time I see it. So I think for me, that moment will stand out for the Canadian side. And that Morocco is a great shout. I think that run was fantastic. That final day where you had the chance of Spain and Germany going out at the same time, it will be something I remember for a long time. And the fact that Japan somehow won that group and got maybe new fans in the process. A lot of good stuff. A lot of really good stuff. I mean, the U.S. moment, I also really like Tyler Adams in that press conference before the Iran match.
Yeah.
Kind of giving us a glimpse into what kind of guy he is and putting himself in the world stage. And he'll be there for a long time as well.
Yeah, and I'll just jump on. I think the Tyler Adams was my thought as well. And then the Germany-Spain, that 90 minutes was just such a wild ride in the group stage. That was very... fun to watch as somebody who didn't care about all four teams. But I think the Canadian moment for me, it's the national anthem, and it's not about the national anthem. Anthems are weird, all that kind of stuff, but it was just something. It was just like the moment that I had been anticipating for whatever, since I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And like, it was the moment where you're like, holy shit, we're there. This is real. All these like hyperboles and all these things that you've said in the past are true. And it was, it's a moment that I'll probably never forget. So it was just neat. It was just a neat moment that you've dreamed of and then you get to realize it. So moving on, we have a question for Twitter. Trevor asks, while everyone's talking about Messi, was the Emi Martinez save in the 122nd minute the greatest, most important save in soccer history? If not, what do you think was better?
Oh, it might go down like that. I wonder if Kolo Muani could have maybe chipped the ball. It seems like a lot to ask of someone in that situation, but I wonder if he's still thinking about that, and he probably is, because I felt like that was one of those tournament-defining moments as well. Given the stakes, given also what he did throughout this tournament and his exploits in penalties, like I think it might deserve it as a collection or a collected tribute to Emi Martinez and the role he played. Because, I mean, this is one of those stories that the domino effect of Neil Mappe injuring Bern Leno a few years ago and getting Emi Martinez in the Arsenal net and having him win the FA Cup and having him secure a big transfer to Aston Villa. Like it, the real sliding doors moment where he might not have been in this spot if it wasn't for Brighton's Neil Mappe being a greasy forward injuring keepers. I find it all fascinating. But I think the context, the collection of his saves, it'll go down as the most important save in soccer history. Yes.
I'm trying to think of other saves.
It's extreme recency bias. Don't get me wrong. I can't remember anything that's happened beyond the last couple of weeks either. So,
well, it's tough about remembering great saves is you're remembering the absence of a thing. So, you know, it's not on any sheet anywhere. It's true. Or it's true. Whatever. It's true. So, yeah, nothing else really comes from. I mean, everything else I would say is penalty kick saves, right? Where the drama is there and that's right. Different. So, yeah, in the run of play and just how out of nowhere it comes. Like sometimes it's like, oh, build up. And then the goalkeeper makes, you know, first save, double save, dives across the goal, whatever. But yeah, for that, it just drops out of nowhere. And Emi Martinez reads the play. He's high enough, you know, in his box to make the save. Like, yeah, just the whole thing's incredible. And I think the key part to it, or the biggest part of it, was that David Goss said the difference between the 2014 and 22 team was Emi Martinez over Sergio Romero like 5 days ago. And so for him to solidify that for the two of us, I think was why this one will go down as the greatest save ever.
Fair enough. I think you guys are not remembering the most iconic save in world soccer, which is Stefan Fry on Jozy Altidore, but I can understand it's been a long time. And then last but not least, I have a question from Sean from a football podcast. And I know that Devang has joked about this, but what was your favorite moment outside of the World Cup in 2022, since this is our last live show of the year? Soccer-wise, it can be an MLS, it could be national team overall, but what was your favorite moment in soccer?
I'm not going to say World Cup because we just did a lot and the World Cup peaks everything. Yeah. So non-World Cup, I think being in Costa Rica when Costa Rica qualified, the U.S. qualified, which was great, in a 3-0 loss, which is less great. But like I'd always wanted to go to what I considered in my head like a true staple CONCACAF away for the U.S. or non-U.S. game. And so that was sort of like a bucket list moment for me. And to watch the fans celebrate because they were going to the, you know, playoff, and to see everything it meant there, which is everything I'd always been told but had never experienced. I'd say that one's probably on the top of the list, and then MLS Cup.
Yeah.
I think I'll say the Canada win against the U.S. in Hamilton, which I think was in January.
Jesus. Yeah, or February.
Yeah, I think end of January. That was a big day. And again, like one of those, Sean mentioned like those benchmark moments or those things that are now expectations and then making us believe. And I think that moment in Hamilton, bringing it to a newer place, maybe not just going to the same place as they usually go. I thought all of those factors made it a really special day for soccer here. So I'll go with that.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think that run in January and February where Canada went, I think it was three straight. They beat U.S., they beat Mexico. Oh, no, sorry. They beat U.S., they beat Honduras. They exercise the demons in Honduras, and then they beat El Salvador. It was just like boom, 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 and you're just like, I don't even care who's next, whether it be Jamaica or what have you. It's just like we're in. We have three games left. We're in, and it just felt finally like it had been done. But that run of those three games were just, I felt invincible. So yeah, I'll say that one as well.
Beauty. That's it. That's it for 2022. Once again, like Sean said, that is it for AFP. We will have some shows, though, in the next few weeks, some look backs to some of the work we've done and some of our more special interviews that we've done. So stay tuned for that. But a reminder, if you did enjoy this week's show or enjoy this year's stuff from us, a rating or review would be wonderful. And like we did say a bit earlier, we're on patreon.com/footballpodcast. Join us there, get the show ad free, get it early on Tuesdays, plus join us on the Discord where we're chatting footy all the time. It's a really great place. And once again, happy holidays to all our wonderful patrons for being great. And we're on Twitter at footballpod. I think that's it for everyone behind the scenes at AFP. Greg, Zach, Dylan, Clay, Sean, David, thank you so much to those people for being wonderful and providing us with so many wonderful words throughout this year. Truly a joy working with you all, and I hope you guys have a great holiday season, because football/soccer never stops, and it won't be long before we're chatting again. So for everyone at AFP, thank you for tuning in this year. We'll talk to you soon.